Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined in studio by my wife, Dr. Jennifer Irwin, DPT, CPT, ABCDE. Is that, I know DPT, yeah, that's the extent of my understanding of all your letters.
That's close enough. It's just DPT, PT, that's it.
Oh, okay. Well, she's a doctor, and I guess technically this is Avery's podcast debut too.
Yeah.
How about that? It would be funny for me, who has yelled and screamed about nepotism all this time, to just welcome on Avery without any kind of proof of that she's actually good at this.
That she's even earned this.
Yeah, but you know what? Nepotism wins out sometimes. So welcome to the show, Avery. Today's show, I know I promised you guys I was going to answer mailbag questions. I will. I was scrolling through the questions, and one that came up quite a bit was, How good do we think DeMarcus Cousins is actually going to be? If he's able to live up to 80% of what he was, what does that mean for the Lakers? If it's only 75, it's a 70, whatever, what does that mean for the Lakers? There's no point of even answering that without understanding what the chances are of him getting back to that level are. So I brought on Jen to talk about, you know, what to expect with the return from an Achilles a year later, 2 years later, what the return from a torn quadricep looks like a few months later. So all of that good stuff. Let's start there. Do we think, so you and I were talking about the injury before we even thought about doing this on the show. Mm-hmm. And one thing that struck me as interesting was that the quad injury was on the same leg as the Achilles injury. I would have thought, because it was on the opposite side of the body, that you would overemphasize that aspect of it and overwork those muscles and therefore have them go out. But you said it wasn't all that surprising that it was on the same side of the body.
Yeah, I wasn't all that surprised. I mean, it's like what we were talking about before. Anytime that you have an injury to one part of the body, mm-hmm. that body's going to lose its strength. That part of the body's going to lose its strength. Uh-huh. So the body has to pick that strength up somewhere else. The calf muscle and the quadricep muscles are our big jumper muscles. And so if his calf didn't have the full strength that it had before the injury, it's likely that the body was picking up extra strength from that quad to kind mm-hmm. of compensate and make up for it. And there's a good chance that there probably was some overuse going on in that quadricep, which might have caused it to tear. I mean, it's very likely, too, that he could be compensating in the other leg. We don't know for sure. It'd be interesting to know how strong that calf was by the time that he returned to playing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't super surprised that it was on the same side.
2 years later, usually the thing that we always hear about in the industry when we talk about Achilles returns and torn Achilles, ruptured Achilles, mm-hmm. is it's at least a calendar year. At least a calendar year just to rehab, maybe even another calendar year to get back to as close as you're going to be to a full return. Does that sound like the right kind of timetable, given everything that these athletes expect of their muscles?
The average time out is usually a year. Mm-hmm. You usually don't see athletes go longer than a year, especially at this level of play. Mm-hmm. From what I've read up, it's anywhere between 6 months and a year, but on average it's a year.
Yeah, but how about the return of those, of everything? Like, have you seen, or are there examples that you have come across either in studies or with patients, or even, you know, the closest thing to a full return to an Achilles is probably in the NBA has probably been Rudy Gay, mm-hmm. but even he has lost some. Obviously, we saw what happened with Kobe. He was never the same. Mm-hmm. Wesley Matthews hasn't been the same. There are all these examples of guys who are never quite the same. So I guess my question is, like everybody else's questions in the mailbags, like how, if you were to average out the percentage that people get back to in that Achilles, either movement, strength, whatever, is the average return about 75%, 78%? Like, are when they come back at the best they're going to be, is that, does that usually look like about 75% of what they are? What percentage would you put that at?
It might even be more than that.
Really?
It's very possible. I mean, a lot of it is dependent on the age of the athlete.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is dependent on any other injuries that they have going on. But if they've done the correct rehab and they've taken the correct amount of time off, they have the potential to come back just shy of, I mean, I would say even as high as 90%.
Really?
It just depends on everything else that's going on. How old is DeMarcus Cousins?
I believe he's like 28.
So he's young.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, so he definitely had the potential to be back to almost 100% probably.
Yeah, he is 28.
And he came back within a year.
Uh-huh.
So it's very possible that he was at 100% by the time that he started playing.
What would you be more nervous about, the quad or the Achilles?
Ooh, probably the Achilles.
Still the Achilles?
Yeah. I mean, the quad, because what he tore was a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
The muscle gets a lot more blood flow than a tendon does.
Yeah.
And he didn't have surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's going to have scar tissue built up in that Achilles tendon. The Achilles tendon and any other tendon in the body does not rehab as quickly as muscles do. So I would still keep my eye on the Achilles. There are definite possibilities that this quad could flare up throughout the season if he is not doing proper stretching, if he's not doing proper warm-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Warm-ups are going to be really important for him before games as far as getting the muscles warmed up, stretching, all of that, and also cool downs after games.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely the possibility of this injury flaring back up. It just depends on how well he takes care of this leg.
Gotcha. The last thing here, regarding DeMarcus Cousins, you know he's a big dude,
mm-hmm.
right? He's a he's a large human being.
Yeah.
How will that size impact the strength in that Achilles? Like, is it something that's stronger than most Achilles just because it's used to working on a larger human being? Does size play a factor in that recovery? How explosive he's going to be coming back? Would you be more nervous, less nervous, or just about the same no matter what, given how big a human being DeMarcus Cousins is?
Well, anytime that you add more weight, you add more stress.
Yeah.
So it's going to require this tendon to hold on a lot stronger when he jumps, when he lands, or when he pivots, or when he does anything dynamic. That tendon's going to have to hold on a little bit stronger because he is bigger. But again, because it sounded like he rehabbed properly. He took the right amount of time off.
It's the Warriors and Kevin Durant is getting ready to sue him, but
no. Yeah. So,
Kidding.
He, you know, old injuries always tend to catch up with us, and so, you know, he still is always going to have to do proper warm-ups and stretching and all of that, not only for the quad, but for the Achilles as well. You know, with repairs in the Achilles tendon, there is less likelihood of it re-rupturing as opposed to him not getting surgery, so mm-hmm. that does work in his favor as well.
It's interesting. Everything around here with this guy is going to be fascinating to watch. You think then that the Lakers can get a pretty productive DeMarcus Cousins?
I think so.
Just based on, obviously, we don't have access to all the information, mm-hmm. so you aren't going to be held accountable to these things.
Yeah, because we don't know exactly what he's doing with rehab and if he's still rehabbing.
Yeah.
You know,
but so with those as caveats, you think he can still be productive? Maybe is it? Would you say like 80% would be a decent,
I mean,
conservative estimate?
Right now, knowing absolutely nothing about what's going on with his rehab and where exactly he is in that process, gun to my head, I'd probably say 80%.
That's fascinating. It'd be interesting. 80% of DeMarcus Cousins is a really good NBA player.
Yeah, he can still do really well.
That's great news.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for hopping on, unless you want to stick around for the rest of the mailbag.
Oh, I think I'm okay.
That was Jennifer Irwin, my wife, the boss of the family, hopping on to talk about DeMarcus Cousins. And anytime any other injuries pop up, we're probably going to bring you on, sometimes with a bouncing baby on your knee.
Yeah.
You cool with that?
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We'll be back in a second. We're back. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm going to now open up the rest of the questions here, or as many as I can possibly get to in the next, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes or so. Let's start here with ZChef19. They are asking, hey, Anthony, love the podcast. Thank you. My question is, what past Laker role player would you add to, would you add in their prime to the Lakers roster spot, to the last Lakers roster spot, hypothetically, to finish out the team? My picks would be a young Derek Fisher or Lamar Odom, just because I want to watch them play again. All right, well, I mean, if we're just talking about utility's sake and we are saying that a role player is basically somebody who will not have their jersey retired, I think Fisher, there's a good spot on this team for Fisher. Obviously, we know he's a championship caliber point guard, seeing as he has five of those rings. He's a decent example here. I would maybe say Norm Nixon from back in the day makes a little bit more sense because of the creativity he offers off of the dribble. I also like the idea of having Trevor Ariza back in his prime, or Ron Artest back in his prime, or the best he was as a Laker to add to this team. He's just the Lakers need another wing defender, in my opinion. The point guard spot, I'm not too worried about. I really believe in Alex Caruso, and then I think they're going to get enough from from Quinn Cook and from Avery Bradley and from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is. Like alternate semi pseudo point guards to be able to make up for whatever they're lacking elsewhere on their roster in that regard. But just in general, this is the era of wings, and if you can give me another, top tier wing defender, then I would feel a lot better about where the Lakers are there. So, Trevor Ariza, Michael Cooper makes some sense there, obviously. James Worthy has his number retired, so that doesn't work. But players like that, give me wing defenders, the Coopers, Ariza, Ron Artest, or Meta World Peace, however you want to name them, and I'd feel a hell of a lot better about this roster as it's currently constructed. Captain Matt writes, Pete, Harrison, and you should set up a bet where the loser has to grow out a unibrow for the upcoming Lakers season. Also, out of you three, who could pull off the unibrow look? Well, Harrison at this point would welcome any and all hair to the upper region of his face / head. So I think he would be the most open to this. Who between the three of us could... Honestly, Pete can do no wrong in the eyes of those who... take in his content and listen to his analysis. So I think he's probably the person who could pull it off the best. Harrison at this point could pull it off second best just because the damage has been done. And then I would just look awful. I would not look good with a unibrow. It wouldn't be great. Next question here comes from UUJR6. Hey guys, just wondering how you guys would feel if Chris Paul ended up joining the Lakers after being bought out by OKC. That isn't happening. It's borderline not even worth talking about it, but whatever, I'll entertain it. I know it was highly unlikely, but how would you guys feel if he joined? Love the show. If the Lakers added Chris Paul to their roster right now, and he was open to playing a little bit differently than the way he plays, he loves to dominate the ball when he's on the court. He needs the ball in his hand and he wants to play a super slow game. I think it would be a really good fit. They would immediately, in my opinion, become the best team in the NBA, probably by a little bit too. But again, as you point out, as UUJR6 points out, it is not happening. He is not going to be bought out by OKC. I think I don't know if he's going to finish the year in OKC, but we're still a year, two, maybe even three away from him being in the buyout market. And by that time, he'll be getting ready to retire anyway. Next question comes from Clam, the Laker fan. So big fan of the show. If either Harrison or Pete show up, the only negative is Anthony. I appreciate that. Almost unbearable with just Anthony by himself. Well, hope you're enjoying the show. So question. I've been hearing this for a while. It has been annoying me. Talking heads on TV proclaiming that the 2009 to 2012 Boston Celtics were one of the best teams of all time, even though they only won one championship throughout that time. My question is, why does no one talk about Kobe and Powell's Lakers of that area, even though they won two championships and had three finals appearances compared to the overhyped Celtics? It's a valid question. I agree with the premise. But what this all kind of comes down to is that Celtics team was a little bit more recognizable. They play on the East Coast. At that time, the East Coast bias, I think, was still a pretty big thing compared to the way that the game and the league is analyzed at this point. But yeah, I think I would agree that it's pretty lame that those guys get to live the way that they do off of one championship compared to the two championships and an additional finals burst that the Lakers had. Let's go another question. The B Run writes, I appreciate you guys always bringing good insight and up-to-date news. Salty Jazz fans think we're not making the playoffs. They can think again. I agree. The Lakers are making the playoffs. Big Fridge 21 writes, hey, Pete and Anthony, had a couple questions for you guys on the next mailbag. One, when AD was announced, he talks about Rob calling him multiple times a day to talk about free agent targets. What do you guys think is the right amount of input for front officers should take in from their stars? And then two, I don't know if you listen to the Rewatchables pod on The Ringer, but they do this thing called Apex Mountain, where they try and pinpoint where a star is at his or her highest. Why do you think the below Lakers, or where do you think, when do you think they reach their apex is in their career? So I'll answer the first question, then I'll list the players that you talk about. I think superstars should always have input, obviously. If I was taking in their input, I would ask them, you know, all right, what's the benefit of X player, you know, this player, this specific player, what do they bring to the table here, right? And this is kind of my problem with the Rondo thing, is that, all right, Rob Pelinka goes to LeBron, AD, and I guess Boogie to a lesser extent, and asks, well, what does Rondo actually bring to the table here? And they say, well, leadership, and he's a great pick and roll player, and he might be good on defense, and then he really steps up come playoff time, right? And I would weigh that against everything that we know about Rajon Rondo. He isn't a good defender. He's maybe the worst defensive player in the NBA right now. He offers leadership. Okay, fine. I'll listen to some of that. But, you know, we also saw him sit away from the team down the sideline last year. And I thought that was a bad look. He steps up come playoff time. All right, fine, sure. But, you know, I would like to have a point guard. I would like to utilize resources on a point guard who helps get you into the playoffs a little bit more than Rondo does. So, I think those guys, their input should be valued. But I would hope that it takes place in more of a conversation setting than it is a demand setting. I don't think it would be very healthy if it was just an outright demand. I demand that Rajon Rondo be on this team. I don't find that to be a very healthy way to do business in any walk of life. To finish off the question here, where the players here hit their apexes. So they ask LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, or Phil Jackson. Thanks for entertaining and the lengthy response. So all right. LeBron's apex, I think, was the year that he beat the 73-win Warriors. I'm not positive we've ever seen the sport played better than he played it at that level. There were stretches where he was more dominant physically than he was then, but the combination of physical dominance and then just mental wherewithal to be able to take on that specific Warriors team was absolutely insane. So I think that's the apex LeBron year. Kobe's tough because he really kind of had, what was it, three apexes, I would argue. So you had like the Kobe who won the three-peat, right? And he was just, you know, more raw than at any point elsewhere in his career. He was just an absolute animal on defense. And it was out there scoring. I think he had either, he was one of the top scorers in the league, but he was also going out there and defending the other team's best player on a nightly basis on the perimeter, obviously. And you know, that was, you don't really see that anymore, that type of a workload. It was just insane that he was able to carry that workload and do so the way that he did. So yeah, that peak. You also had the peak when he scored 81 points, right, in that era where the Lakers just didn't have a very good team around him. And holy crap, was that fun to watch, obviously. You had the back-to-back championship Kobe, where he was a lot smarter, he was a lot more skilled than the previous two iterations of, or the previous two peaks that I talked about. So I don't know, you kind of take your pick between those three. I would probably, like, if obviously the best version of Kobe would have been a combination of the second and third peak that we're talking about, but the third peak Kobe was probably my favorite version of him. He was just those teams with Kobe and Powell and Bynum and Odom and Artest and Ariza, those were some of my absolute favorite teams to watch flat out, and I think his maturity played a big role in making those teams as much fun as they were. And then, you know, there's an honorable mention here to Kobe right before he went down with the Achilles tear, when he was running Mike D'Antoni's offense and obviously playing way too much, but being the kind of efficient that his detractors have always wanted him to be, like, that just kind of went to show, yeah, he was capable of doing this. It's just that the teams that he was on didn't always call for him to be that kind of a player. So showing that he had that in his repertoire was also pretty interesting as well. And then Phil Jackson, I in my opinion, the job he did with the three-peat Lakers is some of the best coaching the NBA has ever seen. He won championships with three very different power forwards. He won them, won one with Horace Grant. He won one with Robert Horry. He won one with AC Green. And all those guys brought very different things to the table at their stages of their careers. And the fact that Jackson was able to tweak the triangle offense to fit what was better for those specific skill sets in those various years was fascinating. And then, you know, the number one criticism I think you can really have of Brad Stevens right now is his inability to manage egos. Was his inability to manage egos last year with Kyrie and then bringing Gordon Hayward back and everybody else. Terry Rozier somehow had his ego go completely out of whack. That was Phil Jackson succeeding with Kobe and Shaq when those guys didn't particularly like each other. And you know, that's what to me separates Phil Jackson from just about every other coach out there. Was, you know, Pop coached in a perfect situation. He had the perfect superstar in Tim Duncan, and then role players who understood their roles and, you know, just managed to get along there. And Phil, you know, he won with Michael Jordan, who wasn't a particularly great teammate. He won with Kobe, who wasn't a particularly great teammate at stages of his career. Shaq, same thing. He's just, Phil to me is the best, and that three-peat run there where he was able to tweak the triangle offense, which is something a lot of detractors of or critics of the triangle offense say that it was impossible to tweak. He just went out there and said, yeah, I can make this work for no matter how, whatever the team needs from it, I can make that work. So Phil was the best. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to answer as many questions as I possibly can. All right, Chase Aguiar writes, hey, Anthony, appreciate all the hate on the Celtics in recent pods and continued mocking of Clippers fans, which I find amusing. My question, what is your favorite kind of wine to drink with a steak, and which steak is your favorite? How do you like it cooked? Last thing for you, thanks for coming on the pod recently. It means a lot. Chase has a good podcast. You guys should check it out. So my favorite wine just in general is a Pinot Noir. If I'm eating a steak, there's a Pinot Noir called Meiomi. You find it at just about everywhere. It's really popular right now. The thing I like about it is it's a full-bodied, it's a richer Pinot Noir that you would want next to a a steak, especially a zesty steak. I like my steaks with a little bit of a kick to them. So, and then, you know, a bit of a trick here that I prefer. A lot of people, you know, when you drink a red wine, everybody says, oh, you're not supposed to heat, or you're not supposed to cool it down. You're not supposed to chill it at all. For a lot of red wines, I would agree with, like, a cab, I would agree with a Syrah, I would agree, right? But with a Pinot Noir, when they're a little bit lighter, just put them, so basically, as soon as you throw the steak on the grill, not when you get the grill going, right, not while you're heating it up, but as soon as you throw the steak on the grill, throw your bottle of wine into the refrigerator, and it'll come out slightly cooler than room temp, and it makes for, it's very refreshing. And if you're having a steak that has a little bit of a kick to it, having just a little bit of a cooler drink there to cleanse your palate and refresh your palate makes for a pretty significant difference in the entire eating experience. Thanks for the question. JWalt33 writes, hi, Anthony. Love the show. Thank you. I listen to it on my way to or from work every day. I have two questions. Where do you think LeBron and AD rank among dynamic duos in the league? I think they're the best one. Two, what's your favorite basketball movie? Basketball is tough. For whatever reason, basketball hasn't translated to the big screen in ways that I would like it to. I really enjoyed Glory Road. I have family. I'd spent like a quarter of my life in El Paso, and Glory Road, the school there, it eventually became UTEP. I've actually played in that gym, and you know, that was pretty cool. So Glory Road is up there. Obviously Space Jam is like a different experience, but it's a fun one. You know, you go back and you mess around and laugh at Bill Murray a bit. That's pretty fun. Coach Carter's is a fun movie as well. I just see, for whatever reason, I mean, the sports, people will say, like, why aren't you bringing up Hoosiers? I don't know. Hoosiers is a little iffy to me. I think it's a little overrated. I don't like movies that put an overemphasis on the players. One of my favorite things about Glory Road was that, yeah, obviously the coach they employed that starting lineup and played that final with the all black starting lineup and rotation, right? He sat his white players against Adolph Rupp in Kentucky and obviously wound up winning. And he deserves obviously a ton of credit for that. But the point of that was that, like, no, the players are really effing good. Those players specifically are really effing good. Let's make sure we play those guys. And there was, I thought they balanced out the balance of player and coach importance in basketball better than like Hoosiers, where, you know, Hoosiers, the guy shows up and, oh, he's this the savior of this team, and oh, he got Jimmy to stick around, and Gene Hackman was just this genius who outsmarted the big bad black team from across the city. Like, it's just the Hoosiers isn't great upon rewatch. I like Glory Road the most, but, you know, I'm still waiting for like the great basketball movie. I'm still waiting for the Fields of Dreams of basketball. Let's go to another question here. Rocky Boy 24 writes, hey Anthony, thanks for providing Laker content and keeping us entertained throughout the summer break. I have two questions. If you couldn't cover the Lakers, which other NBA team would you cover and why? And then number two, which Laker outside of LeBron and AD will have a breakout season? Well, the obvious answer to the second part of this question is DeMarcus Cousins, right? Given where his stock is currently compared to where the talent level is. If I couldn't cover the Lakers, what NBA team would I cover? Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this about me. It isn't the NBA, but I actually covered the Dodgers for Dodgers Nation for about 6 months or so. I ran Dodgers Nation, and boy, was that an experience. But I won't go back to the Dodgers beat anytime soon. But for basketball, which NBA team would I cover and why? I think this year is going to be a fascinating Warriors season. I think if I had to just pick one team, that I wanted to cover for next season specifically would be the Warriors. Because, you know, this is where we, not necessarily where we find out everything that we want to know about Steph Curry, but this is a bit of a gut check to him. And I want to see how he handles covering or carrying a team in the way that, you know, he's already kind of penciled in as the second best point guard of all time. All right, fine. Show me that you just belong to be, you know, show me that you deserve to have your name not just penciled in, but penned in. Put that in permanent ink this next season. That'll be fascinating to watch. Next question here comes from New York, but love the Lakers. Any chance OKC buys out Chris Paul? Nope, I don't see that. I already answered that question earlier anyway. Johnson Baby Powder writes, "Hey Anthony, big fan, and I listen to the show every morning at week. I wonder if it's at Johnson & Johnson. Two quick questions, one serious and one fun. Now that the Lakers are shaping out their coaching staff, they've hired some great defensive coaches such as Vogel and Hollins, as well as a phenomenal players coach in Phil Handy. However, I still think we need an offensive coach to fill out the staff. Who would you recommend as an offensive mind to join the coaching staff? And my second question is a fun one and can't be asked to you and Pete if he's there, or can be asked to you and Pete if he's there. Would you rather live on Mars as a billionaire or stay on Earth and make $50,000 a year?" If I have to live in California and make $50,000 a year, I don't know if I could do that. That would be tough. So I would take Mars. You guys would still listen to the podcast, I would hope. But for the first question, gosh darn it, I think his name is Chris Finch, and he worked with the New Orleans Pelicans last year. Yep. Yeah, so Chris Finch is known around the league as one of the absolute foremost minds in terms of offensive tactics. He honestly should probably be a head coach at this point already, but for whatever reason, he isn't. He has familiarity with Anthony Davis. He would be, to me, the perfect hire. That's who I would want the Lakers to bring over. If the Lakers were to hire Bill Finch, I would wash my hands and say, from an organizational standpoint, they did just about everything they could this year after Kawhi left, or not left, but wound up signing with the Clippers. Let's go one or two more questions here. I'm Drew writes, "Hi, AD is better than Giannis. I don't even think it's close. Prove me right or wrong." Well, I don't like it. Look, just in general, if you're trying to make a sports point, saying "I don't think it's close" doesn't necessarily make that point sound any more impressive, right? Because that means you're not even open to the opposite side of the argument that you're making, which means that you probably haven't taken that side of the argument particularly seriously, which makes it really hard to offer up counterpoints to whatever the person is going to be arguing you. You know, like if I was, let's say I was pro AD in this conversation, and I said it's not even close, and I haven't even considered any other possibility that Giannis is in that, I guess, area, is close to AD as a basketball player. Well, then when somebody says, well, Giannis does a lot more to help, you know, to create for his teammates, and I would say, nuh-uh, right? You don't want to hear that. So just in general, end your point before you go so far as to say, I don't think it's particularly close, unless it actually isn't close. And when you're talking about best player in the world, chances are these are usually pretty close. I could see the argument made for Anthony Davis over Giannis this year. Last year, there wasn't a case to be made because Anthony Davis wasn't particularly trying all that hard. Years previously, I think you could really make a case for that. 2 years ago, when he got the Pelicans to the playoffs and beat Portland, I would say that, yeah, he was probably up there as far as the best players in the world. Now, that was when LeBron was 2 years younger also, and his case for best player in the world was pretty indisputable. But I think this upcoming season, especially now that Kevin Durant is not going to play next year, I do think that we'll get a lot more articles and tweets and topics, even on this show, making the case for Anthony Davis over Giannis. Just, he's 3 years older. He's playing in a really good situation for him. I think he's a little tougher to guard on the offensive end than Giannis is, which is wild to say, but I think it's true, just because he's bigger, like physically bigger. But yeah, that kind of stuff matters, and I think, you know, there's a case to be made either way, but I think I would make the case for Anthony Davis. All right, let's go one more question here, and I'll call it a day. Jay Raw writes, "Hey Anthony, and hopefully Pete." All right, so there's you guys. I've already skipped over like three or four Chris Paul questions. It's not happening. I'm sorry, everybody. He's the head of the players union. He can't just give back $50 to $75 million just to be on a championship contending team. That doesn't set a very good precedent. Let's go. Saul the Kid was recently playing 2K, and the announcer said something about Brandon Ingram's eyes lighting up, which is hilarious because B.I. looks half asleep all the time. Just thought it was funny. Anyways, my question is, does Pete get as excited to run certain plays in video games as he does when watching film? P.S. Chris Webber is just as bad on 2K as he is in real life. I hope to find out some of these things about Pete in NBA Jam or... So, I'll tell you this, and I'll let Pete answer this when next time he comes on. He's on tomorrow, so I'll have this question ready for him as well. But I've played Pete a few times in ping pong. He's really good, for one thing. But he is not as loud in he isn't as – I know he's crazy competitive, but he isn't as, like, loud about beating me as I would have thought he would be. I thought he would be a lot more showy in his exclamations in winning and stuff like that than he is. So maybe NBA 2K or NBA Jam brings out a different animal in him. But yeah, he's pretty late. He's a lot more laid back than I thought he would be in that kind of a competitive setting. But who knows? I hope that we get video soon of he and I competing and stuff because it's fun. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Thank you everybody for the questions. We still have so far to go before I get to all of the questions. I finally got out of the July 15th range and into the July 16th range. So we'll continue to scrape away at these. Thank you very much to Jen for hopping on and the information that she provided there. Exciting stuff. If you're hoping for a DeMarcus Cousins bounce back season here, she seems to think that he can make, you know, probably not a full recovery, but, you know, something relatively close to it. So that's exciting stuff as well. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.